This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good Tuesday morning to you. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. You know, I talked about this with sports teams before. In relation to your favorite local restaurant in your town, not the chain restaurants, not the ones that have big corporate backing. I mean, the mom and pop Italian restaurant or the mom and pop whatever restaurant. If you love a place so much, you care about its economics, you know that that mom and pop might be struggling to put people in the seats and one day could just go bankrupt and not have your restaurant anymore. So if there's like a favorite place that you have, what do? You try to go get people to go there. You try to get people to support it because you know you're invested as a fan of the restaurant, as a customer of the restaurant. You want it to last. So you care about its economics. You may not know the numbers in the books. You may not know how much their payroll is or how much their costs are, but you want to make sure that they're getting value for what they produce because you like the food and you want the restaurant to stay there for a long time. When it comes to sports teams, major professional sports teams, we don't seem to care about economics, right? We only care about economics into how it affects the product, not whether or not it's a viable thing, whether or not it's a franchise that is going to be non-existent. You know, except for the few times like in Oakland or other places where relocation is on the table, most of us don't care how billionaires spend their money when it comes to teams. But when you have a salary cap, it matters. And when you have a salary cap, that's when fans have to become almost part-time accountants because you have to figure out, along with the salary cap and the current salaries that are on your roster, you kind of, as a fan, have to figure out how a guy's salary is going to play in to the things you can't and you can't do. Perfect example of that is the NFL. The NFL is a league that most of us are fans of. Most of us love teams. We love following the league. But we also have to become almost amateur capologists when it comes to our teams. Because when we get to the offseason and a player is signed, we almost have to go, oh, God, what does that mean for our offensive line if we can't go get this type of player or that type of player or what it works? The NBA is no different. And look no further than what happened over the weekend with the proposed Bradley Beal trade to the Phoenix Suns. The Phoenix Suns are now loaded financially with three guys. And that, you know, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Bradley Beal. Now, they're going to score a zillion points, but they don't have a team around those three. And so economically, as a fan, you kind of have to process what this is going to mean. DeAndre Ayton is going to have to go. What do you do then? How cheap can you find a center? How cheap can you find a wing? How do you fill out the roster with enough, just barely enough talent so that you have something there, but economically you can't go in a certain direction? And that's where we fans have to become almost like crunching the numbers ourselves. That's going on with the Golden State Warriors as Draymond Green has opted out. And now the Warriors are trying to figure out how do we keep Draymond Green at a lower salary but a longer contract so he can stay if indeed he wants to stay. They're not going to be able to pay him what they want. He turned down the player option of $27 million because he wants more. But what more? What does he want? Does he want more or does he want security? And that's up to the Warriors to find out. It almost takes a little bit of the fun out of being a fan because we always talk about sports escaping reality, moving away from sort of the real world and going into this sort of competitive, fun, entertainment world. But when you're a true fan, that real world decisions, those real world economics do creep into being a fan. If you are an NBA fan, for example, you are wondering how sort of the money are adding up to put your team together, especially if you're a fan of the Phoenix Suns. Now, look, I said yesterday that I think that despite this sort of obstacle that the Suns have, it's the best move they could have made. Meaning you've got Kevin Durant, you've got Devin Booker, you want to move on from Chris Paul, you want to move on from DeAndre Ayton. There is only one play, and that is to get Bradley Beal. Even if he was disappointing as soon as he got his huge salary that now the Suns are going to take on, which also includes a no-trade clause. But nevertheless, it's the move you've got to make if you want to create a team around Kevin Durant. Now listen, I know people are starting to compare Durant's situation in Brooklyn that didn't work and whether this will work in Phoenix. But I remind people, what didn't work in Brooklyn was the fact that it was almost doomed from the start. Remember when Kevin Durant got there and brought Kyrie and then later James Harden? They did not have very many games together as the three of them. Right. A lot of it had to do with Kyrie and his inconsistency. Right. By not getting the vaccine, he wasn't allowed to play in the city of New York. I'm not arguing for or against that. I'm just stating what the facts were. So he wasn't a consistent presence on the team. There were injuries. They just did not come together very well. And then James Harden started to realize maybe this wasn't for him. And he wanted out and he ended up in Philadelphia. So unless we see injuries, dissension in the ranks, and one guy being hurt so much, which is a possibility because all three could get hurt. But if we see that, then we can start making the comparison. I would use Brooklyn as an outlier in this. I would not use Brooklyn as something to compare what's going to happen in Phoenix. I think that it was such a unique scenario with a superstar player in Kyrie Irving that just was so inconsistent in his presence. And it wasn't just the vaccine mandate. He would disappear. He'd come back. He would take personal time off. It became to a point where they were not steady enough. And even in the playoffs in 2021, they still almost beat Milwaukee despite all of that. So I don't look at Brooklyn and say, okay, Kevin Durant's under a lot of pressure because he couldn't make it work in Brooklyn. Well, he couldn't make it work in Brooklyn because I think we had a very unique situation with what was happening with Kyrie Irving. If healthy, I think the Suns are going to score a million points. I mean, that's the key. That's the thing. They're so good with the offense is going to score a zillion points. But defensively, I think that's where they're going to struggle. But maybe they just outscore everybody. But again, going back to the economics, that is the thing that as fans we have to start thinking about. It's especially hard on kids because kids don't understand the economics, right? I mean, kids don't understand why players are traded, why they choose to go somewhere else. They don't quite get it. But when you look at the shakeup that's going to happen in this league, Damian Lillard likely is on the move Thursday night during the draft. Or maybe he's not because Portland has the number three pick. Maybe they convince him that with that third pick, they're going to build a young team around Damian Lillard to make some push in the Western Conference. The Miami Heat want somebody else. They're getting old. Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry are not getting any younger, and neither is Kevin Love. They've got to get a little younger. Well, Damian Lillard is not exactly a spring chicken, but they could add him to their roster. They could get rid of Tyler Hero. They could dump some draft picks Portland's way as they rebuild. And going back to the situation in Washington, where Washington wanted to do one thing with Bradley Beal. They wanted to give him the Supermax contract and hope it worked out. They did. They gave him the no-trade clause. And then when they realized they've got to strip it down, this is the result of that. And they don't want Chris Paul, so it's very likely that a third team will be stepping into this deal so Chris Paul can go to a contender. And they can get other assets as they do a complete rebuild. So again, it's just... This is the time of year as we get closer and closer to Thursday night's draft where you can start talking about some of the young players, especially Victor Wembanyama, but Scoot Henderson as well. Some of the young players are going to come into this league. They're going to light up this league. They're going to be the future of the league, all of that. But also remember, this is a time where teams are really, really trying to understand economically where they're at and how and trying to achieve their goals, whether it is going through a complete rebuild or trying to win the NBA championship. The Phoenix Suns are trying to win, obviously, the NBA championship. And yet, they have stripped down a team that was there 2 years ago. There's a very few people that are left on this basketball team that were in that series against Milwaukee just in 2021. But this is the direction that they're going. I mean, even the head coach that was there 2 years ago is not there anymore. But these are the moves that you have to make. I don't know if you had a choice of any move, any player, this is not the one you would have gone with, but that's not how this works. It works because in the end, you get a player that can score like Bradley Beal when he can. He got a lot of money and was rather disappointing. I was saying this yesterday. He's being paid like a superstar, but he's not on that upper echelon level. But I think that's irrelevant. I think in the end that you are trying to be aggressive in a very limited sort of cap apron tier world of the NBA salary structure. But it's the best way to go about doing it. I mean, But the other problem is this. I mean, when you have three guys that can score like they can, it allows another team to play 5-on-3 if the other two players that are on the court with you at that time are no threat whatsoever. You can almost see the Nuggets sort of ignoring whoever else is on the court to concentrate on these three guys defensively in the postseason. So, again, I find this kind of stuff fascinating, and I'm not a big economics guy. I'm not a big salary cap guy. I have to kind of do it to understand the dynamics of teams, especially in the NFL. But how teams will go about the next couple of days trying to put themselves in position at this draft coming up on Thursday night to try to figure out the direction that they want to go in the future is going to free up a lot of players and where and who is going to be available and who is not. Look at DeAndre Ayton, for example. Who's going to want a center that's going to cost some money, that's got some cap space? Which teams are going to be able to go after DeAndre Ayton? Like Houston can. You might get San Antonio's got some money. There's some other teams that have got some money that might actually dive into this conversation with Phoenix as they try to shed some more salary to add some other pieces and fill out a roster that is very, very thin right now. But again, that's the move you're going to have to make. I support this move for Bradley Beal. I think that you can't win with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant and Chris Paul. I don't think you can. I don't think you can win a championship. I think you win a championship with three dynamic scorers, and you have to figure out how Frank Vogel can get that team to play better defense than what is on paper. And you're also going to have to fill out that roster with some other players that are not necessarily great because you got to get them cheap, but also at a point where teams are just not completely and utterly ignoring them when they're on the court so they can concentrate on the big three. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. We'll get into the Golden State situation. Do they want Draymond Green? How do they keep the dynasty going on as we continue along? Thanks for joining us. Tony D, Ron Culver, and it's Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. We continue this morning. Glad you could be with us here on Sports Map Radio. Thursday night, the NBA draft. Two rounds, the Victor Wembanyama coronation, already being looked at as the future face of the league. That's not enough pressure. Like, it's one thing to be like, can you just do some good things, maybe help the San Antonio Spurs out of the basement? But now they want to make him Giannis. They want to make him the next Giannis already. Well, he is huge. I mean, what is he, 6'5", 7'4"?
Something like that, yeah. But is that too, like, much pressure to leap, put on a,
yeah,
on a kid?
I think so.
I could crack.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, if you – I don't know much – I mean, other than what he's done on the court, I don't know his background, like how right. he grew up or anything like that. But, you know, LeBron and Kobe were, like, kind of – raised, like, they kind of knew who they were, and I think LeBron especially kind of knew, like, hey, there's a lot of attention on me. And Victor Wembanyama had a lot of attention, but I don't know if he's been in the same environment like LeBron growing up in the United States with the NBA directly around him. I don't know if, I mean, who knows? Maybe he's ready for it. He seems confident kid. Seems like he's, you know, ready to, he knows he could do really good things in the NBA, but it's different. It's being a face of a league is a totally different beast. It's a totally different thing than just being like, I just want to get to San Antonio and help them win some games. That's it. I just want to see if we can get better every single year.
Yeah. But maybe make the playoffs as a play-in team.
Yeah. Why not? See if you can, climb it up and then down the road, see where the Spurs are. So, Charlotte will have the number 2 pick, and then that's followed by Portland, as I mentioned earlier, Houston with the number 4 pick. And Houston, along with the Spurs and Detroit, they were the three teams that had the best chance of getting the number 1 pick. So the Rockets will be picking 4th under Ime Udoka as their new head coach, and the Pistons with Monty Williams. They are the 5th pick in the draft, and then it goes from there. So again, where will Damian Lillard land if he stays in Portland? Maybe they convince him that they're going to be picking a good, strong, young player that will help maybe make one push, like Scoot Henderson or Brandon Miller, depending on what Charlotte does with the number 2 pick. But other than that, if I was Damian Lillard, I think I'd be like, you know what, I've done enough here. I'd like to go somewhere else. I'd like to be a little bit more competitive. I'd rather not be in the lottery. So I think I'd like to venture off somewhere else. He did praise the Heat in a podcast. So that's like, and if you're Miami, I mean, what do you do? Well, like I always find this interesting with teams that make strong runs from like the basement of the playoffs. I mean, they got in, but they're like down below. Is like you've given the fans a taste of something pretty great, and you're under tremendous pressure to do it again, but you can't expect to do it again. I mean, Milwaukee is not going to have a back injury to Giannis Antetokounmpo in round one. The Celtics might actually be better the next time you were to play them. Maybe the Knicks get stronger. Maybe Cleveland gets better. Like, you don't. So you had a lot of things go right for you en route to being an 8 seed that made it to the finals, but you've got to find a way to get better, because you can't just count on other teams sort of giving away games to you. That was the difference between the Nuggets run to the finals and the Heat's run to the finals, is that Denver never had a team beat them so badly that you'd go, okay, I now know this is a series. Denver lost 4 games, 3 en route to the finals, which were really close and pretty tight. 1 overtime to Minnesota, 2 to Phoenix. But Miami, we always looked at Miami and said, man, they're doing some really cool things. But we also looked at their opponent and said, yeah, but their opponent is doing X, Y, and Z, and that's allowing Miami to be leading this series or winning this series or absolutely or just, you know, taking this team out. We never said that with the Nuggets. I mean, we never looked at Minnesota, Phoenix, or the Lakers and said, you guys failed to live up to something you were in losing to this Denver Nuggets team. The Nuggets were the best team in the Western Conference. They showed that they were the best team in the Western Conference. And they won the title. But that's not the case with Miami. And then you can't do that from an 8 seed. You can't. Because that's sort of the definition of your magical run, is that it starts at a point where nobody expects you to advance. So if you're Miami and you're Pat Riley, you're like, okay, I want to continue doing this, but I know Jimmy Butler is getting older. Kyle Lowry is going to be 38. I mean, I think Jimmy Butler will be 35. I need something. I'm going to need something else to add to this team, because Damian Lillard's 31, 32 years old. So if you are Miami, that's a good age, still young, still very, very productive, averages over 32 points per game. If you are Miami, You just ran to the finals, not needing Tyler Hero, right? Not needing Tyler Hero. So is Tyler Hero now an expendable asset that you could give Portland for Dame? So I'm wondering if that happens on Thursday night or not. The NBA draft. You know what does bother me about the NBA draft is you don't see this in the NFL, like very rarely, but you know in the NFL. If the Lions get up and they draft a player and that player walks on stage and Goodell gives him a Lions jersey and he goes, yeah. And he's like, and then he goes over to the place, to the interview, and they go, what does it feel like to play for the Lions? And he's like, I'm so excited. I can't wait to get to Detroit. I can't wait to play. So excited, blah, blah, blah. When you go to bed, there's a good chance that guy is going to be a Lion. Or a Charger, or a Steeler, or whoever, right? It's a good chance that's the case. In the NBA, you'll see a guy get drafted, he'll put on the Charlotte Hornets hat, and almost as soon as he's walking off stage, they go, oh yeah, by the way, Charlotte just shipped this kid to Utah for a package of players. So it's almost like you have to wait till the draft is kind of in the books and like a day later before you realize all of these guys are on the move. Like they traded, like Charlotte will make a pick and they have an agreement with Utah that they'll draft this player so that they can now get that player in the trade for whatever. So it's a game where if you're writing it down with different markers, you're using all sorts of different colors in the NBA draft. So it is possible, for example, for the Portland Trailblazers to have they take the 3rd pick and then somebody else will take a pick that will also be part of the Portland Trailblazers in terms of a package. Or you might see Dame Lillard get traded to Miami and Miami making a pick. It's all sorts of things that can happen. But you don't ever feel comfortable depending on, especially the mid to the bottom picks of a player, because you have no idea what's working on behind the scenes. And that's a lot to do with the economics of the NBA. And it is a lot to do with just deals. Like, look, we want to get rid of some expiring contracts and this player, we'll pick this guy for you. You get him, but we get some assets from you that are going to help us, whatever we're doing. Like, if you're Washington, Kristaps Porzingis could be traded. They're going all in on this rebuild. They've got the eighth pick on Thursday night. They are completely going in all in. Kristaps Porzingis can still play. He's not the unicorn like he used to be, but he's still gotten to be a better player. So he's, you know, he could be on the move too. Thursday night could be fun, man. It really could. It really could. Especially down in Houston where you guys are. Watching Ime Udoka start building a team to try to get the Rockets back into the playoffs in the Western Conference. I know it's going to be a while, but this is the step in the right direction. So, all right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. But I also think in the end, and I was saying this earlier about the NBA, I think in the end, it becomes extra complicated when you're talking about GMs trying to figure out what money they can keep and what money is going to cost them. Nobody wants to be in the luxury tax. If teams are dedicated to getting out of the luxury tax, it does mean some other moves are going to have to be made. If you're Golden State, and as I was mentioning earlier, you're Golden State, what's more valuable to you? Do you want to keep this big three together? You want to make one more dynastic run? Yes, but is Draymond Green going to be a part of that? Is Draymond Green an important cog in that dynastic, making one more push to continue the idea that Golden State is still a strong presence in the Western Conference? You know, they just won a championship a year ago, and they were out in the playoffs by the Lakers. People thought that there was a playoff switch to a really, really bad regular season. But I didn't expect them to go, you know, win 70 games. I mean, sometimes you just get the championship hangover and the regular season doesn't matter. But we always looked to them and said, all right, they're not very good on the road, but the playoffs are a completely different beast. And the playoffs weren't a completely different beast for them. They weren't a very good team in the postseason. And so if you want Draymond Green, when you sit down and talk about him, what are you going to do with him? Are you going to be able to offer him long-term and less money per year, but give him the security that he's looking for? Or is he going to be end up with the Lakers? So his report was he was vacationing with LeBron James in Europe. Does he end up with the Lakers? You know, does he end up in some other location? Because they can give him a lot more than the $27 million that he opted out of. But if you're Golden State, these are questions you're going to have to ask yourself. Can't last forever. We always know that. Right, no matter what kind of team you put together, it does not last forever. But they finished fourth in the division last year. They were just above 500. And that playoff switch did not turn on. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. An interesting column from Charles Robinson. Could what happened to Liv in the PGA Tour happen in the NFL? Very interesting thought. We'll get to that coming up next. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hey, coming up in hour number two, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb. And then Christopher Hall is going to join us to talk about Bob Huggins out at West Virginia. He resigned after being arrested on Friday. He is from Mountaineers Now of SI.com. So we'll talk to him about that. That's all coming up in hour number two. Charles Robinson, who I like, by the way, at Yahoo Sports, good columnist, covers the NFL. Senior NFL reporter, it's not a column per se. Columns usually enhance a lot of opinion, but it's more of an article, but it's more of like an in-depth report on just kind of a question of whether or not the Saudi Public Investment Fund that just bought the PGA Tour and has got its hands in soccer, Formula One, a number of other sports entities around the globe, could it get its hands on an NFL team? Could it get its hands inside the NFL? It's got tremendous amounts of money. It would raise the value of any franchise that was up for sale, but the NFL does not allow foreign investment into its league. It's sort of something that the owners have said. But I found the article rather interesting because it goes into a little bit deeper as to the wealth of this public investment fund, which could top or get close to $1 trillion. You have $1 trillion, that gives you a tremendous amount of power to buy anything that you want, because eventually you will reach a point where somebody will say, well, I'll never sell to that, or I'll never do that, like the league is saying now, like we'll never do. But then after a while, you go, wait a minute, hold on, they're going to give us, they could give us $15 billion for a franchise, right? That's that you never say never, but you know, never. But that's sort of the thought process. And you remember, this is all about a couple of things. I mean, this is all one of the reasons why the Saudi Arabian government, this public investment fund, has been buying up these sports entities, is because sports has a way of washing away sins. And we see it all the time. We in this country especially, we do it all the time. We'll have a player get in trouble, but the fan base of that player supports that player and sometimes even thinks that he's actually innocent of some of the things that are being said about him. We do it all the time in sports. It happens. It's just a mindset that we have, especially on the college level. College level's crazy. I've always been mind-boggled by some people that will get on their coaches, you know, their the coach of the rival team for having an infraction when they know good and well that their school probably has had a couple of those in their history. But it's the way people just go, well, I got a problem with this or this, but forget it. It's just the sport. But here's what I found interesting. And so Charles Robinson talked to a couple of executives in the NFL about this for this article. And one AFC executive, when he heard the PGA Live maneuver, said, I was immediately out on the practice field. I heard it in the hallway. And by the time I was outside, guys were already talking about it. I can't remember the last time that happened. I don't know how we would have handled it if Saudi Arabia wanted a piece of the NFL. But I think that will be at least a back burner conversation for franchise owners, or maybe a front burner because of the timing with the Washington Commanders sale finalizing and the Seattle Seahawks coming up. And so he was already saying, look, even though it is very unlikely that the Saudi investment fund will be able to get their hands on an NFL franchise, don't ever say never, because if you've got the Washington Commanders, a team that was in complete disarray, but yet still one of those franchises that is valuable in terms of its history and its location and all of that, that it went to $6 billion, don't be surprised if the Seahawks come up and there's a push to see how far that money can go. And sometimes you use these outside entities, although the league does not want that to happen. One NFL president said the fact that the PGA couldn't sweat out Live for a year is pretty bad. So what's really the likelihood of this happening? If you talk to people around golf right now, if you hear people talk about golf right now, here's their biggest worry: that right now the PGA Tour and Live and the DP World Tour are now going to be completely controlled by the Saudi Arabian government. That they will eventually put enough people on the board, because they will dump so much capital into this thing that they can't help but allow a stronger presence from this investment fund into the PGA Tour, that now it's just completely owned by it. Again, I remember when Liberty Media, which owns Formula One, there was a conversation before that happened that the Saudi Arabians wanted to buy that entity. So you have a situation where in the NFL, they're like, no, we're not utilizing foreign investment. We want guys here in the country buying these teams. But one of the reasons that some are deflecting on the idea is that the NFL is not in trouble. The NFL doesn't need an infusion of cash like the PGA Tour did, right? One high-ranking official, again, according to Charles Robinson in his article, said the PGA was weak. They were talking tough, but how they folded in such a short time span says everything. The only way any part of the NFL will ever be owned by a sovereign wealth fund is if the league changes its minds and invites that money in. And maybe that happens, but the NFL isn't going to be bullied into it. The closest thing that we have to a distressed asset right now is going to sell for more than $6 billion. And after that, it's going to be lawsuits and investigations. We're not exactly operating from a position of weakness in any scenario. And that's a very good point. There isn't a need to look outside for outside capital. There isn't a need for somebody to be a savior of a league or a sports entity that is dying for an infusion of cash. Now, the league may look at some investment company or investment fund bid on a team and be like, oh, well, hold on. You know, like, but in the end, the owners are going to be the ones that are going to vote on that. And do they want this league in the presence involved in the day-to-day operations of this league? Do they really want the Saudi investment fund at the owners' meetings when they know that, again, they're putting their hands in a lot of sports cookie jars all around the world, and a lot of it is for reasons that we know why. They're not, it's not because they're fans of these sports. They're not because they're sports fans. It's because, again, sports washing is something that has gone, is been the big topic. It has been the big term. How far do you have to go back for before sports washing became part of our lexicon now? I never used the phrase at all until probably the Live Golf Tour was starting to come together.
The only thing I can think back on was when Saudi Arabians or, you know, the Gulf states started to purchase European soccer clubs.
Sure.
And that was the first time. I remember when they first bought Manchester City, which I think was back in the mid-2000s. And that was like, whoa. That was a big wow moment because all of a sudden you knew you had a billionaire who was just going to come in and spend money, which he's done. That's what he's done. I mean, Manchester City is now a premier team in the world because he just spends money. He doesn't care. He's like, oh, I'll just get this one. Here, I'll just sign a check. There you go.
And remember, too, we've talked about this with its involvement in Liv. Remember, they're not giving the money away. These are assets that they're buying.
Yeah.
So, like, it's like art. You know, you buy art that's $50 million. It's $50 million. It's in your house. Like it's an asset.
And you're hoping it appreciates.
You're hoping it appreciates, and you hope in whatnot. But it's still that you can put your money into that asset. That's what they're doing here. They're trying to say, look, our entire economy is oil based, but we would love to have other things that generate lots of money.
Right. We talked about it with Dubai and Qatar. You know, one of the things, you know, they hosted the World Cup, but one of the things that they realized early on is like, hey, guys, you know, eventually the oil is going to run out.
Right. You know, we want to be involved in something that's bringing in revenue.
Yeah. What happens then? That's why Dubai has all those crazy islands that they made, or the indoor skiing mountain or whatever it is.
And every rich person on social media is like, I got a house in Dubai.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're trying to build it up as a vacation destination because they know that, hey, you know, a couple hundred years from now, we got nothing.
Do you know how hard it is to build a garage in Dubai for my 6 Bugattis? It's very difficult. Right. Everybody's going to Dubai. But yeah, you're right. And I that's 100% correct. And so again, I loved this article because it's a great piece because, again, it's not likely, but it's a never say never, you don't know possibility. But I'm with him. I think that the league is not in trouble so that you want this infusion of cash. And if you can dictate those terms, very likely they won't. Who knows? I mean, that was another point Charles Robinson brought up. Who knows if they even want the NFL yet? Like, they want to get involved in the NFL yet.
Well, I was going to ask this. I mean, if you go back to the 80s, early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, was it hypocrisy to think that a European man could buy an NFL team?
Sure, yeah. Right.
And we have that now, right?
Yep, that's true.
And Shad Khan, I mean, isn't he British? So
I believe he is.
So, I mean, you know, that was probably out of the realm of normalcy, like to think that, you know, even someone outside our country would want to buy an NFL team. So it's just a matter of time.
I mean, again, it's when you're talking assets, I mean, look, you don't have to be a fan of the asset or interested in the asset to know it makes money. I mean, the Saudi Arabians would be like, I don't even care about American football, but we know it's a $1 billion industry.
I don't even get it.
Yeah, I don't even get it, but it doesn't matter because we know what we're seeing over there just in terms of just pure economics is guys are buying teams for X, and then a few years later, they're worth triple, right? Yeah. I mean,
Or just to get into the league itself with just to get in the league itself. $10 billion a year profit.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I want a piece of that.
Exactly. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Again, hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's.
With Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, again on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. One more thing on this piece. I will have to say that one more thing on this Charles Robinson piece, which I found interesting, was, okay, so you have this situation where the league is like, okay, we're not in trouble. There would be no reason to, you know, to get an infusion of cash. Like, we're not like the PGA Tour. We're not panicking. But then one quote at the end of the article sort of sums it up. Like, one executive was like, they were talking about the last two teams that were sold in this league, the Denver Broncos and the Commanders. So I'm going to read the entire quote from the article by Charles Robinson. A productive straw poll is what kind of support exists if a sovereign wealth fund attempts to obliterate the best offer on the table. The most recent two sales, what would the mood have been if the Broncos or the Commanders had drawn an offer, and this is just an arbitrary number, but what if that offer was 50% better than the best offer on the table? What if an offer was doubled? I assume another $3 to $6 billion premium would have put some fight into the Bolin family and Dan Snyder. They would have tried to find a way to take that offer. And I'm not sure that some other owners wouldn't have agreed. Throw a check for $9 billion out there and ask all the owners if any of them would be ready to sell for that number. You might be surprised how many hands get raised. And I think this is one of the keys, right? It's if you go to Jerry Jones, right, and you say to Jerry Jones, I'll give you $10 billion for the Dallas Cowboys, he probably would not sell, right? He probably would not sell. If you said $15 billion, but, hear me out. What if he had to sell? What if he had no choice but to sell? What if the league said, you've got to sell that team? And he said, I don't want to sell the team. I'm sorry, you have to sell that team. He said, fine, I'll sell the team. Now you're in a different position. Now you're in a position to go, well, screw it, I don't care. I'll sell it to whoever. You guys can approve it, but I'll sell it to whoever I want. And then you guys tell that person he can't be in. So if you're Dan Snyder, for example, and a Saudi wealth fund comes in and he goes, well, I'm not going to be part of this party anymore. So, yeah, what do you want to offer? $11 billion? Yeah, I'm going to take that. And then let's see how many people in that room say, we don't want them involved in the NFL. So we're going to turn down a franchise being sold for $11 billion, even if it ups the value of all of ours. That's where I think there's a backdoor sneak that can come out of this thing, is that you're talking about a departing person from a very elite club whose only goal is to get as much money for this as possible. Like, do you think Dan Snyder is like, no, I want to do what's best for the NFL? He's probably like, no, burn it down. I don't care. No, I don't care. Like, I joined this thing. I've been, they've treated me like a pariah. I've been a pariah, whatever it is, but I'm out. And while I'm out, I might as well get $15 billion for it if that's what they want to offer. Now, again, he doesn't get to sell the team for what he wants. He can just agree to sell the team for what he wants, and then the owners have to figure that out. The owners then have to vote on that. This new sale, for example, has to be approved. The sale to the guy from Philly, that has to be approved. So if you have a sovereign wealth fund that kicks in and says, we'll give you $6 billion more than what the last offer was, or $3 billion more. And a departing owner says, sure, is the league really going to say no to that deal if it ups the value of their franchises by $3, $4 billion? That's the question. So I think that that's rather interesting. And then Charles Robinson points out two things. So all of these executives are saying, look, it's very unlikely that that will happen. It's very unlikely that the Saudis will ever get into the NFL. But he points out, hey, listen, you go back. You don't have to go back that far. The NFL would have never, they said, no, gambling, we're not getting involved in the gambling industry. And now they are. We're never putting a franchise in a place like Las Vegas that's built on gambling, but they did. So again, business is business, and you never know with business. There's almost no absolutes. After a while, when something becomes attractive financially, so like I said, Jerry Jones is not likely to sell for $10 billion if you just went up to him and said, I'll give you $10 billion for the Cowboys. He's very likely to go, well, I'm not interested in selling. I got no reason to sell. I'm good. No, I don't want to.
But what if you went up to like Steve Tepper of the Panthers?
Right, right. What if you went over there? What if you went to a family or somebody that is needing to depart?
Yeah.
All of a sudden it becomes a different story.
Like not a blue blood owner. Like I can't think of the Rooneys or Maras wanting to sell.
Again, that's
But I mean, if the price is right, those guys will sell.
Yeah, but again, it's a different frame to look at it. Like right. if I have a piece of art that I love, somebody can offer me all the money in the world for it. But if I like it, I'm going to go, no, I don't need to sell it. I don't want to sell it. I'm fine. I love it. I love seeing it. But if my family was broke or I had to sell it, then I'm going to get the most money I can for.
Well, that's why I said, you know, like Steve Tepper, I mean, he bought the team, but, you know, he hasn't, there's like not a rich history of him owning the team.
Right. But again, if he had to sell it, he'd be like, I get $10 billion for it. Why not? Wow. Why do I care? So the Seattle Seahawks are on the dock to be sold.
Yes.
So again, if you're the Saudi fund and you want to get involved, there's no crime in offering money for that franchise. You could go, we'll buy it. We'll give you $9 billion.
And I know it's up to the NFL owners to make a decision, but why would they say no? Right?
That's the thing. If they say no, they'd have to say no on principle that they don't want foreign investment into the league.
Which has already happened.
It's not an investment fund of a company.
Okay. Yeah.
A country. So it's like this is the country's investment fund that they're putting into it. Like an individual owner from somewhere around the world, that would probably be a different story than the Saudi government's fund buying an entity. So if you are an owner, you have to say, I just saw the value of my franchise increase because somebody's offering $9 billion for this. I'm going to have to say no based on principle. So I just thought it was one of those really good reads that made me think a number of different angles to it, because look how skewed the PGA Tour is getting for this. I mean, they're embarrassing. What the PGA Tour has had is embarrassing. And I think the people who are right to criticize them, they talked a tough game, but in the end, they had nothing. They had nothing, and they knew they were nothing. This is the ultimate sports bluff I've ever seen in my entire life. This is literally going to the high-stakes poker table with Zippo and going all in. They have no cards, and they acted like they did. And when I bet Jay Monahan slept 3 minutes in the last calendar year, stressed out about what he was getting involved in. He was trying to beat an unlimited slush fund with no money. He was on Heritage. How far is that going to go? And I think the smart guys on that tour were convinced of insiders who knew exactly what was going on. That's why I've said this before. I'll keep saying it again. The guy I had most respect for when it was all said and done in that live PGA throwing was Harold Varner. Because he was the only one that went, I'm doing it for money. I'm doing it for my family. I'm doing it to create a different kind of wealth than just being a rich golfer. I'm talking nine figures here. That's going to set up my family for generations to come. That's why growing the game. It's all that nonsense. Nonsense. He's like, I'm tapping into something that's going to change my family forever. Forever. And they'll never go back. They will never be poor again. That money will just keep making more money and more money and more money for generations and generations. At least he was honest. The PGA Tour was trying to convince these golfers that it was all heritage, it was all legacy, and they had no money. Well, the NFL is not in that position. The NFL is not in that position to go, well, we're talking up a tree here, but in the end, we have no bark. All right, we don't have a bite. We have no funds. We have no money. They're rich. They're loaded. Everybody's making money. The league is doing well. There's no need for the infusion. How does the Saudis get into the NFL? They get into the NFL by offering a price for a franchise that's so big, it makes the other owners go, wait, what? Hold on. Now I'm worth six. Wow, this is crazy. Like, that's the only way that can happen. Once there's a team for sale, watch to see if they ever come into bid. Because if they ever come into bid and it's turned down, you know that they'll stand on that principle of foreign investment coming in. But they will also know that no one else is going to offer them $9 billion. No one's going to offer $3 billion more than the asking price. If the Seattle Seahawks are valued at $5 billion or $4 billion, whatever it is, $5 billion, and somebody offers them $9 billion, no one's going to offer them $9 outside of that fund. The fund will only offer them $9 to get a piece of this league. All right, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up in hour number two. We'll also talk about the Bob Huggins situation in West Virginia. It's all coming up as Wake Up Call continues.